Bajan Rhythm and Rhyme, and Sluggy Dan is in. He's not physically here, but he's here via Zoom from Canada. And we say a special warm good evening to you, Sluggy.
good evening, manners, manners and respect. Bajan Rhythm and Rhyme every Saturday, 6:30 p.m. powered by Starcom Network and VOB 92.9 FM, presented by Sluggy Dan and Bame Got Talent, where we speak to everyone and anyone. We just seek to get inspiration from the everyday Bajan, from the average Bajan, who we know have a unique story to tell, who we know Bajans in their own right. Every Bajan, no matter where you think they come from, no matter who you think they are, no matter what you think they do, have a unique story to tell. And that was the challenge for me, for the meaning of Bajan Rhythm and Rhyme, came from Ronnie live on air. When Ronnie challenged me live on air, think outside the box. It's like when you're getting guests, don't just think what you do, think of guests that can also come and teach you. And they got big up Mr. Clark for that, and that changed the direction of the show. And I must tell Ronnie, thank you for that, because somehow, I was nominated for Radio Personality of the Year. This is so crazy. I can't even explain about Barbados. Big up on her. Bajans had to vote. They had to send in names of who to like on radio. Mostly younger people, upcoming people like Saul, Sluggy, Zen, who's one of us. Zen is one of us. Spinning, who did shows with us with Starcom, lots of shows. I saw Barry and Thorny name as well, who's also part of Starcom Network. A lot of people are Starcom. Scott LaRock, who's also part of Starcom. Scott and I starting a new show soon. But I must thank Barbados, though, Ronnie, for nominating me for Radio Personality of the Year, gine.com, 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 and you can vote for Sluggy Dan for Radio Personality of the Year. He also was nominated for Activist of the Year, Social Media Person of the Year, and I have a podcast called Wake Up to Greatness on Mornings that was also nominated for Podcast of the Year. So biggest everybody who listened to the show, who loved the movement, and nominated myself, my platforms for so many awards. And I understand one or two more nominations still to come. Let's see. Open mic, I expect to get nominated for Best Open Mic. So that was my long preamble. I had to take my time and thank Barbados, because never in a million years envision I will ever get nominated for anything to do with radio personality. Is saying I used to dream about when I was a kid. So I can't start saying it until they go. I can keep saying it so that other children and young people that are listening and that love me so much, them can know, listen. They can know, Ronnie, it start with a dream. You understand? They can know it start with a dream. I used to be a young man, a child. I used to hear people like Cal Roberts on radio, Dennis Johnson on radio, Alfred Pragnell on radio. I used to want to be Patrick Gallup so bad. I used to be wanting to be on the road talking to everybody. I used to hear Patrick going to people's house, eat the food, Ronnie, drink some of the tea.
It's true.
I mean, and nothing never happened to him. And if people know he come in, everybody got out the cleanest plate, the prettiest fork, the warmest cup of tea. And I mean, like, everybody just love him. I want people to love me like that. That's the truth. I want people to love me like that.
Well, I can assume I've never taken it for granted that I could do the same thing. I keep my distance.
Yeah. It's so true. It's so true, Ronnie. It's so true. But big ups, everyone borrowing this door. Starcom Network, we are still leading. VOB 92.9 FM. We are still number one. Who anyone invests me for saying that is just the truth. We are still number one. And Uncle Sluggy was nominated for Radio Personality of the Year. Imagine that, a hardest boy from Jackson. This evening, Mr. Clark, don't even get serious because a lot of things happening in Barbados. A lot of our boys are troubled. I believe a lot of our young girls can help them. I believe there's a lot in our past that we must look at. And I believe we must talk to people that are educators, that are accustomed educating people. You know, to ask the questions like, you were in the system a while. Did you see these things coming from afar? Could we have stopped them? Can we stop them in the future? What does your personal story have to offer that can help us in the long run? You know, Ronnie, questions that we really have to ask, because I don't have the answer. That the truth, bro. I don't have the answers. I am positive. I can't speak for you, but I am positive that if you had the answers, you would have given me them without me even asking you for them. So you know you don't have the answers either. So we will ask as much people as possible, and hopefully together we come up with a solution to make Barbados better. Ronnie, can you do me the honors this evening and, you know, introduce Barbados to our esteemed guests. And it's 434-1790 if you want to call in and shout out your community, shout out your district this evening. If you want to shout out some person that is doing positive work in your community, it could be a church, it could be a school, it could be just a business person in the community, it could be just a neighbor that is giving away. 434-1790, you want to shout out to anyone positive this evening. I'm feeling good. Hard ears, sluggy. That Dennis Johnson works so hard with, that Ronnie works hard for some years, was nominated for Radio Personality of the Year, man. Anything is possible.
You ready?
Yes, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, Keisha Rock is a mindset coach, empowerment speaker, author, and educator. After experiencing some personal struggles, Keisha embarked on a journey of self-discovery and self-improvement, where she implemented and revolutionized strategies to sustain personal growth and development. As the founder and CEO of Kairos Professional Services, Keisha provides services to individuals and businesses around the world, in the Caribbean, the United States, South Africa, and farther afield. She's the author of Releasing the Past, Building Beauty from Brokenness. In this book, Keisha shares her personal story and how she was able to navigate one of the most difficult seasons in her life when she battled depression. Keisha's mission is to use every platform available to her to add value to the lives of individuals and to encourage them with her mantra, don't allow the past to hold the pen that writes your future. She's penned a book called Releasing the Past. Woman of God, mother, worship minister, teacher, she believes in the transformational power of El Shaddai. Life is no fairy tale, and as we traverse this sod, we will meet trials, temptations, and challenges. In this book, Keisha shows you how her life experiences have brought her full circle to a life of victory in Christ Jesus. It takes an intimate look at her journey through some valleys and how she was able to overcome those moments with God's help, guidance, and by surrounding herself with the right people. Her prayer is that as you read the book, you will be able to open the door to your own personal healing and transformation. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Keisha Rock.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening, Sluggy.
Yes, please. Yes. Thank you so much for coming this evening. Keisha, it is an absolute pleasure to have you. Before I get into the nitty gritty, I want to ask you first, the path you are on now, was this the path you were on from a child? And if not, how early this journey start? This Keisha we have now, how early this start, and who were you before this Keisha? I am me to get so deep for the first round, but this is just Uncle Sluggy.
That's all right. I think, you know, we always say 2020 is hindsight, you know, as we look back.
True.
I think the path was always set for me, but I never understood. I think as I grew, as I developed, as I started to go through things in life, and now looking back, I can see that there was always a plan for my life. There was always a path that God wanted me to be on, even though I tried to run from it probably many times. You know, you talked about being the hardest boy growing up in Jackson. And funny enough, I ended up at a church in Jackson that helped with my transformation because of the leaders at that church. And it would be remiss of me not to
mention. Which church is this? Which church is this?
This is Jackson Church of God.
Oh, that door, that church of Razor Pinger, that where you get the most trouble, Pastor Dricks.
Yes.
Listen, boy, yes. My good friends, Tavia, correct. My sister. Oh, God,
one of
sorry.
My very good friends.
Sorry, look at life, you know, and then the people that helped change my life, the people that you're talking about, man, helped change my life. God, the sluggy that I want to see in here is a different person because of the same people that you are mentioning.
Correct.
Life is so weird.
Yeah, so I think I was always on the path, but not quite understanding the journey that I was going through at the time. But I think I'm better able to appreciate it. Now, life is never easy. And in this season, especially with all that we're experiencing economically and all that's happening socially, as an educator, things that I am seeing in our schools, there are lots of concerns. And we may have talked back then, things were difficult, but life is completely different now and it has new and more diverse challenges. But I think I'm better able to navigate the challenges now because of the things that I've gone through, the experiences I've had, the growth that I've been able to experience as well.
Nice. Where you receive you? How was your experience at school? Because you are an educator now. In your primary school coming up and secondary school coming up, you ever thought, well, listen, I'm going to be an educator?
Oh, no. I did not. I did not. I actually would have done my studies in psychology. Ooh. And my passion, you know, has always been counseling and now mental health. So I didn't see myself in teaching. It's interesting because one of my former principals recently passed away and that took me back to, you know, reminiscing about school and so on. So I went to St. Stephen's Primary School, which at that time, sorry, yes, I was in Black Rock. So at that time, it was St. Stephen's Infants and Junior School. And I used to traverse from Spikestone to go to St. Stephen's. And then from there, I could hear the school bell ringing from home because I then went to the Alexandra School. And
you had some of Jeff rooms?
No. I must say I'm a bit older than that.
All right.
But yeah, it was an interesting journey at school. For the most part, I enjoyed it. I think until I was struck with failure in fifth form, which really then took my life on a different path, and I didn't want to go back to school.
What happened in fifth form, Keisha?
I think for me, when I look back, there were things that I was going through and not understanding them. And then when the CXC results came back, there was evidence that something had gone wrong and terribly wrong. And I was too embarrassed to go back to school. Prefect, for some, a teacher's pet. My memory of my principal who recently passed was being summoned to the office because at that time I was trying to figure out what did I do wrong, because I never did anything wrong. What could I have possibly done? But Mr. Irwin Brathwaite, my former principal, summoned me to the office. Everyone that morning was saying, Keisha, Mr. Brathwaite, want you, Mr. Brathwaite, want you, Mr. Brathwaite, want you. And I was like, what did I do? And I went to the office and sir presented me with a manila folder with some sheet music and asked me to sing Mary's Boy Tale with him. Now, if you know Mr. Brathwaite, anything about Mr. Brathwaite, he was also the deputy principal at the Ellerslie Secondary School. He was an excellent, excellent, excellent singer. A voice that, especially at Christmas time, I love to hear. So it was.
So that must be intimate, but that must be intimidating for.
Listen, in front of the whole school.
Yeah,
with the principal, but I was
an authoritative figure.
Mr. Brathwaite was, even though he was, yes, a disciplinarian and authoritative. Mm-hmm. As students, we loved him because he loved us.
Nice.
And I can tell you the sluggies of the school turned out to be policemen and in the BDF. Because when, as they used to call him back there, when Darian Lambert land on the scene and things incorrect, you're going back home.
Listen, them teachers, those teachers are so important, right, Keisha? Because when you say the sluggies of the school become police, right? Like I had them people and they end up being a police for 16 years.
Correct. You understand?
You know what I mean? So like we was saying it, that's a fairy tale because it happened to me in real life.
Correct. And I say to my students, no, I'm actually on long leave now. The 15th of this month was 16 years that I was teaching.
Nice. Congrats, man.
Thank you. I say to my students, if I don't love you, I will let you do as you like. But because I care about you, I will correct you. So I find I have students who gravitate to my classroom who are not in my age group because I teach in the early childhood program. So I've always been between nursery. I spent 9 years in nursery. I spent then the rest of the time between infants, A, B, reception, class one. And I have students who would have passed through me, older students now, who they come to my classroom and they would spend time with me. Sometimes I try not to chase them away, but use the opportunity to have conversations with them. Because when you see children coming, there's something that's on their mind. Sometimes they want to talk. And these are things that I think in retrospect, I understand now. But when they don't get a voice, then we get problems. Then we get problems, Sluggy. And I think we're seeing a lot of that in our schools.
No, you really, really quiet because you just threw my head. You just threw my head in a loop there. When you say, when they don't get a voice, that's when we get problems. And as simple as that song, that's so true. I remember I was doing my morning show, Keisha, because I want you to speak about that when they finish, about when they don't have a voice, it's create problems, why it creates problems, and where is it hard to pull them back. I want you to answer that when they finish. But I was doing a morning show this week, right? And so far, like, three young men come up on the show and we're just talking like, for hours on my morning show. So they asked, I was just asking myself, like, why these little men? So little men every morning would get so early and talk to me so long, though. When little man finished, I had to post one of the video clips from Bim Got Talent. The little man finished, the little man say that, you know, like, sometimes youngsters just want somebody you could talk to that won't judge you. You know what I mean? Like, because some youth want to say things, but but you know, most of the time when you see a saying, how you men and get on, there's how the little men talking, you know, and playing behavior like this. You know, when you see a saying, how everybody get on all the time. So some youth want to be able, like, you could just talk enough and nobody, like, laugh at you, know, and they're the youngster. So when you say that ring a bell.
I think you see it in children. I think nowadays, I think one of the biggest issues with our society is that most of our children are painted with the same brush, especially if you are not an exceptional student. And when I say exceptional student, I'm talking about a student who is operating at a level where you are getting 80s and above or 75 and above. Then you are painted sometimes with a brush. It's unfortunate, but I think sometimes that's what happens. It also has to do sometimes with our environment and where we live. Sometimes if somebody here, you come from a particular community, there's a label attached to that. And some of our children are not getting a fair break. Albeit, I think at times there are some parents who are not making the effort, and some of it is not all their fault because some of them don't know how to be any better.
True.
Some of them don't know, and then there's some who don't try. You know, if I spot a student with an issue, I think the onus is on me to bring that to light, speak to the requisite persons, the relevant authority figures, and get assistance for that child. I don't think children should be passing through our schools with problems and none of the problems are addressed. And I said I didn't expect to end up in education, but I will say I did my thesis on establishing a need for guidance counselors in the primary school.
So I guess you did?
Yes, please. And that was in 2006. So that is a program that is only now rolling out with the social workers in our schools. But that's something that I figured we needed years ago, because the children, they want to be heard. As I said, they want to have a voice. Sometimes they're battling internal battles, and we have this thing that, you don't have bills to pay, you don't have responsibilities, so what stress could you have? But then when we look at suicide rate in our children, clearly something is happening that's not being addressed or adequately addressed.
So why the disconnect, Keisha? Because may you mention the suicide, ma'am. Clearly there's a problem there, but still there's something in us old people that when they don't pay the bills, what stress, what mental health, what wrong with the what, there's still that inside of me, inside of us somewhere, you know it wrong, you know it's not right, you know you're treating kind of stuff, but it embedded in us real deep. You know what I'm saying? And said, but it's saying that I can admit. You understand? It can admit like the fault of God, you know it wrong, so you don't mention it, but it would trigger in your mind. Well, come on, man. Wrong with it. But then when you see your child kill himself, kill him or herself, Keisha, it just be like, how do you get to that place where it's something so finite, it's so final that is done here? Like, nothing in matter but me going along and leaving you off. At such a young age, so clearly there's a huge disconnect because children taking their own life.
Yeah,
well, that's a tough decision.
It is a tough decision, and when you get to the point at that age, because I think it takes an enormous amount of strength to take your own life.
Like, seriously, come on, man, that's a tough decision.
When you get to that point at 13 or 15 or 16.
Yeah, I mean, you're more just smoking. You know, the normal thing to do is smoke and get high or drink, turn the alcohol or turn the druggy. That'd be normal thing to do. So you can at least rehab, at least try to pull back the body. You know, although drugs bad, but still, you know what I mean? You try, many people come back, but then you tell yourself, all right,
like, there's no other option.
You got to understand that. Keisha, like, I care about drugs, not alcohol. Just end it. You ever gain the bad road, you gain the final road.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what I was saying in terms of persons not having a voice. And what was just dropped in my spirit was an incident I had or an experience I had with a student who was sneaking in their bag to eat snacks during class. Now, in my time, you're about so you can get to your fuzzy and break time.
Yeah.
Not lunch time. It's not evening snack time. And school has not finished. So where are you in your bag taking out a snack?
Yeah.
But my awareness now brings me to the point where I'm asking the question, why are you sneaking to eat? What's happening?
Yeah. But we know the deeper reason for that, especially among Black children.
Correct. So they're hungry. Some children are hungry.
What children wasn't raised like that in school?
There's nothing at home to eat for some of them, Sluggy. And economically, the way things are happening now, it is hard.
Yeah.
It is hard. You understand? And we can't just look and, because I can put myself together really nice and come on here. And I can tell you, I've put myself together over the years and come on and done things. I know how to show up.
Mm-hmm.
People show up and they're broken.
Yeah, that's oh my God, Keisha,
and they're struggling, but they're people, showing up.
Listen, you dropping some bombs here. I know how to show up. Listen, that is a whole topic. That is a whole show. That's a whole series. Just study that. Just stay there, Keisha, before you go on. Everything you say after that, remember, please, because we can go there, right? But no, because like, it's a deep thinker, right? And you see, when you just mentioned, I know how to show up. I just picture how many people, I picture, all right, like, my buddy Dennis Johnson, who used to work here, remember, I think Dennis telling me how sick he'd feel. But they can't tell. I can't see it. Pickety crop, they were the pickety crop or something like that. And I went with Randy Eastman, right? Mm-hmm. So Randy Eastman now, who's my manager as well, managed everything for me. Came along with him. Before he get up on radio, commentated for him picking the crop. Dennis was there. Then Dennis was just telling me once, oh, he didn't feel good or whatever, but he didn't look it. And then he didn't mention some condition he had, which he didn't know. So then, like, he tell myself, like, people is look so good and so well. They remember uncle of mine. My uncle of mine was looked so good, but he passed away sudden. And then my dad tell me that he used to be sick, man. He had diabetes. He didn't used to be good, but they used to tell nobody. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I just start remembering personal situations of mine. When you mention, I know how to show up. How much people probably doing that? And then from listening to you, it seems like young children learning to do that. And that's what that seems dangerous, Keisha.
It is dangerous, but I think we need to be aware. I guess I'm not the conventional educator, so maybe okay. It's my experiences.
Yeah.
Maybe it's my experiences. I will also say that I always felt loved by my teachers from primary to secondary school. I can always tell you about teachers who I felt loved me. And as an educator, that's what I want to be able to do and to exemplify. I saw a student today and it was like, I know this child's face. I can't remember which school. And she was like, Miss Rock. And she just smiling and shaking. And well, this child hasn't seen me for a little while, obviously, because I'm on leave. Because I believe she's at Hinesbury, where this is where I teach currently. But yeah. Children know when you love them. You can't fool a child here.
And for you, that the main focus, that's the main focus in being an educator, making the children feel that you love them.
Our children need to feel love. They need to feel appreciated.
More than to see you as someone focusing, but that's doing a job.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, when you have the child who's struggling in the classroom, Sluggy, that no matter if you teach a concept six times, they're not going to get it. You have to bring something else to the table. If not, that child is not going to want to get up and come to school in the morning. Come. Uh-huh. And there's no opportunity for them to eventually get it if they don't show up.
Gosh, there's no opportunity.
They got to show up. They have to show up. And if they're showing up and, you know, I recognize, okay, well, what I'm doing isn't working, it means I need to make a shift too. So I have to be able then to meet that child where they're at, which puts a little more pressure on me. But at the end of the day, if that child can come up to 50 or 55%, let's just use percentages, you know, just as an example, from where they may have been at 30 or 35, I think that I would prefer for them to come and be able to get what is their maximum, because their maximum may not be 80 or 95. But if their maximum and they're giving of their best, Sluggy, and they can hit that 55, then they know I've gotten all that they can give all, and they can feel comfortable to know, you know what, I tried. I did my best, not only for this world, but for myself. I did the best that I can do, because I never ask any parent what school a child is at or has passed for. How are they doing? Because at the end of the day, you can go to Queen's College and walk out with nothing. Because if you don't apply yourself when you get there, it's wasted time.
That's true.
So
that's so true.
I never ask. Because I don't ever want a child to feel like they have failed because they have not met society standards, because that's what it is as far as I'm concerned. Society standards and these benchmarks that have been created, not saying that children should not try to do well, but there's a reason why we have schools at varying levels, because their children operate at varying levels. And if you look at doctors and lawyers and so on, there are persons who went to St. Lucie, now the Darrell Jordan School, Frederick Smith, Parkinson, who are doing extremely well locally and abroad.
Yeah.
You understand? So, yeah, I think our children just need to have a voice. I think we need to create more forums where they can speak, and the forums not be focused on us and what we want, but actually let them say what it is that they want to discuss. You can help moderate and guide, but let them have a voice.
Yeah, use you just discover things like that, and that'd be my aim, you know what I mean? Well, with Bim Got Talent, that'd be my aim for sure, to allow the children to express themselves freely, and then sit back and just watch them express themselves freely, like you say, you can moderate, but give them as much rein as possible so they can see what they'd rather do. So they could take what they'd rather do, how they'd rather be, how they'd rather speak. So they could take that and take the positives from it only and go to them where they are, teach them how they are, how they want to learn, how they receive things, learn how they receive things. So that would be my aim for allowing the children to have them platforms, like you said. So I'm so happy to hear you say that, because that is key, providing platforms for the youth to express themselves. You just never know how much people are helping that way. I see on 95.3, some youngsters get opportunity to DJ Keisha, right?
Nice. And
play. Like Barry and Tony. They're a little while they're playing now. And Barry and Tony, you know, they got Cool Entertainment. Who Cool Entertainment now got enough of the DJs? See, 10 of the DJs with them. Artists, managers, everything, a whole crew. So them two youngsters know shed a light on Cool Entertainment, and they Cool Entertainment know shed a light on so much other people. And it's a whole big network just from youngsters getting somewhere to express themselves. So were you saying what you are saying, and just you saying what you think?
Mm-hmm.
Were you saying the things that can work, especially if we do it on a big scale? Hey, what, Ronnie, I want some minor question. Ronnie, you there? Mr. Clark is there?
Mr. Clark is here. I was just checking up on the same Barry and Thorny, because they got football coming off in 5 minutes and all the technical things are in place.
Oh, yes, nice. Look, I want to ask you a question. I heard Keisha say, I know how to show up, and it rings so many bells. How early in your life, Ronnie, you think you had to learn that as a man and be seen as a leader, because you were seen as a leader from young. How early did you learn that? How has it served you? When you hear terms like, I know how to show up.
Well, with the parents I had, it's not a matter of choice. It's what I was taught. You know, I had a 6'3" black Barbadian father who went to England in 1962 along with 500 other Barbadians here to join the armed forces.
It's so true.
And then he would have met my, I think, 5'2" or 5'1" mum, or 5'4" at her height. Maybe a bit more, with wedges and heels on.
Heels, you know. Yeah.
As a kid, you say, "Well, Mum got very tall very quick," but then you recognise it's the shoes as you get older.
Yeah.
Very determined that you know it was turbulent, and Rupert, Joe, myself, and my big sister Mona, we had to navigate that. Love both my parents, but they made sure that we had what we needed when they could afford it. Had all the love in the world from both, even if they didn't necessarily show that to each other for parts of their union. But there was love in the house, and we didn't have a lot materially. I didn't have a telephone until I came to Barbados in 1985. Never had a telephone.
Nice.
Used to go to the phone box all the time.
Whoa.
That's why I was so comfortable going to the phone here, the pay phone, with about 25 quarts in my hand and neighbors begging for a break before I start to chossle. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, when the bus pass, you put your hand over, say, yeah, what's that? Was all that? Just the bus passing by on the outside.
To mute the sound.
Exactly. But the reality is you got to be tough. And I had people like my aunt Cynthia, my aunt Barbara, and then, you know, my dad's friends and partners, you know. They still encouraged us to just do our best, and because me and Rupert had a certain amount of talent and gifts in the sport, academic and entertainment arenas from the time that we landed, you know, we were able to make it. But as an adult now, and as a father and formerly a husband, you know, life takes a different turn, and when you're on the radio, and when you're on the radio being heard by a combined audience of as many as 100,000 people. I mean, you just got to get on with the job, and you have to perform at a high level. And I came in 1995, having already been on stage for 14 years and doing various shows with various artists, big artists, but Dennis Brown and Gregory Isaacs and so on, and being mentored by the Admiral. You know, I came here and I was a rookie. I couldn't get on the team, but I was on the bench and I was learning. And I was coming down here at midnight to sleep until 5 o'clock in the morning to see how Steve Blackett and Admiral did the morning show on a Saturday. Leroy the Joy did the one till sunrise from 1 o'clock until five in the morning. So I come in here and see how the veteran worked. Then I learned from everybody, Patrick Gollum, Vic Fernandes, David Ellis, Alfred Pragnell, Ogilup Seal, Carl Scott, people like Nomi T, KB Clean, who I knew away from radio, Christine Bourne, you name them, Michelle Spencer, who's with us again on Life 97.5 FM, Velma Ashby, Sharon Skinner, as she was then, Lorraine Henry. You know, I joined the same day as Cassandra Samuel, Samuel Ali, and Gaynell Marshall. Four of us signed on the same day. And we're still in the business in some way or another and operating at a high level. It's about being the best and allowing people to say that you're not, but tell them bring it, you know? And that's mm-hmm. that's how we operate here. We're not intimidated. We're not scared.
We love that.
We're not intimidated.
I do.
We're
love
not scared, that. You know? We're not intimidated.
Love
not
that,
scared.
Keisha.
But my children... my children know me as a person who takes his work seriously. And, you know, as a man, the dedication to work can detract from other areas in your life. And you can see that later when you look back. But yeah. That doesn't absolve both persons from being able to do better. But, you know, when you look back, you learn a lot. And yeah. when you listen to people make contributions on the radio, Or you speak with people off air. Everybody has a story to tell. Everybody has their own unique life. And
That's so true.
You look today, you've got the great Carolyn Leacock, buried today, a service today. But as I look here,
yes.
You know, Dennis would have been in this room once. John Deasy would have been in this room. Alfred, Carl, Eric Nurse, Braddy, Patrick Ward, Ruby. Everybody at every level within this organization has had someone
yes.
that's gone, that used to talk to me, that I used to speak with in real and live living color. Ralph Richards, for example. And it hurts your heart, really. It really does. And sometimes you feel guilty that you're still here because they're not.
Survivor's guilt. Survivor's guilt, Ronnie.
Yeah.
Survivor's guilt is the real thing.
So you remember that they had certain... standards that they operated under, and certain quality and class and preparation and execution and presentation. So whether it's here on radio or as it was prior to me being on radio as a rapper and then being here as a Calypsonian with a different type of mission, and then having spent many years in church evangelizing and sharing the gospel and you know, all of that. So there's a lot to learn. So you just have
learn
to
learn how to show up.
And I could tell you that, you know, people need to understand that the financial challenges that people have can cut across the classification that people put them in, whether it's poor, working class, barely surviving, middle class, one paycheck away from not being able to make it, or being rich or having a lot of money, but having a lot of issues as far as that money is concerned. It's not reserved for the extremely poor and challenged. It's a different type of scenario that can cause anxiety, maybe in even greater ways. But that's not a comfort. That's not a comfort or to dismiss or diminish the impact of what's happening with the poorest people. And whether you are at school and you don't have the same football boots that anybody else had, they laughed at my football boots. They laughed at them. And then my mum decided, well, whatever it takes, I'm going to get this kid a pair of Adidas or a pair of Patricks. You know, so your confidence level goes up. You step on the field in the replay of the game they played before, and you dominate.
You're touching some things, boy. You're touching some things tonight, boy.
And you dominate. You know, my first paycheck came from... came from DJing at 15. You know, I think I got a whole $20 or something, which was a lot in 86. I remember once rapping, there were five of us, the Electro Funk Masters, and We got $20 and we went to Barbados Pizza House and we still had to put money to get a ridiculous pizza, you know. But it's knowing that you've achieved something, knowing you have a skill and a talent that is exceptional, and that in due time it will come. And that was before I even embraced the gospel. And, you know, things like Hebrews, where it speaks of faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things unseen. When you're going through the valley, you can't see it. You can't see it. You can't see the other side of the mountain. You can't see the peak of the mountain. But you know you've been told, you know, that this will be the outcome. And you strive for perfection. You know, you're pressed mm-hmm. towards the mark of the higher calling, forgetting what is behind you. Because everybody has sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. That's what the Bible says, and I'm not embarrassed to say that. I don't want some people some people don't want you to speak about it. But that's part of a challenge for thousands of years, you know. So once you understand, according to Jeremiah 29, for I know the plans I have for you. You know, that's a promise, you know, to do you harm. Not to do you harm, but to do you good. And be encouraged by that. Just be encouraged and keep going. So when I speak to young people and I speak to schools, I know within that crowd that, as you've mentioned before, there are many, not just some, many, especially in 2023, that are not eating three meals a day.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah.
Don't have the five fruits and vegetables. They can hear the messages, don't drink this drink and don't eat that sweet, but that's not a reality in their house. And I want to say to all you people that are saying that, I know you mean well, but you're talking to thousands of people that just don't have the money or the means. So for you to tell them that the money isn't a significant factor, you can X, Y, and Z, you don't understand. You really don't. It sounds good. It sounds well-intentioned, but that's not the reality on the street. That's not the reality in the homes, right? And you can look and see far more people have lost temporarily, just disoriented or feel defeated. And you're seeing more men particularly on the streets. And I know that where women find themselves in that position, in that vulnerable position, understandably, there is an attempt to make sure that they don't have to get to that position where they are on the streets, even if they are struggling to find their feet at that point in time, whether it's a week, a month, 6 months, a year, maybe a year and a half, right? So we got to be careful about the things that we tell people without acknowledging the reality of it. I know that there might be a schematic, a formulaic way of saying things. There's an order of presenting a particular type of program, but it may not address the reality of what people are going through. It may not.
That is true.
And that speaks to counselors as well.
Yes.
That speaks to counselors as well, especially in terms of relationships. You've got to be honest. You can waste a lot of time for couples. You can cause more harm for the people that those couples have responsibility for by seeking to reach reconciliation at all costs, even if it's temporary and it's not permanent. These are real factors of life in Barbados, especially coming out of COVID-19 and the environment that we lived in, the restriction of freedom, you know?
We ain't look at that yet.
Well, you have to look at that, and you have to look at the medical future as well. Nobody wants to address that elephant in the room. It appears as though there's a desire amongst certain people just to keep a certain level of communication on certain things. And I don't think that does them or everybody else the best way. It's not the best way. And we've got a lot of issues to deal with in this country. But my thing is homelessness, poverty. So when you speak to an audience that sees it and they know it.
Welfare double. Welfare department double.
And they know it. So the sensitivity, even under pressure, to speak into people who have need at this point in time, right? But I've lived long enough to see people rise. I've lived long enough to see people become successful above and beyond they could imagine or think, according to Ephesians chapter 3, right? Exceedingly abundantly. And you can't see it, but you have to have faith that's going to happen. You got to work. You got to learn. Oh, yeah. You got to prepare. You got to upgrade. You have to look at your mannerisms and say, well, maybe that's not the best deportment for me to be able to connect. It has nothing to do with selling out. It has everything to do with doing the right thing. And if you keep doing the right thing, right, and you treat people the way you want to be treated, in the best way, not in the worst way, then opportunities will come, but you have to be ready. Don't give up. Don't give up. To anybody out there listening, you never know who's listening. I've seen this before on radio where people were thinking of committing suicide, but a song was played, a word was shared, a message of inspiration and hope was presented, and it stopped them, literally stopped them from taking their life. And if that's you tonight, I want you to make the choice to stay alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Speak to somebody. You could even call a radio station and speak to me. You could speak to the announcers on duty. We understand our role here too. And we understand the need to put you on to maybe someone that is trained and experienced in that area. But don't give up. You won't be able to do that if you give up. It can get better. It can. So, you know, we have to understand that it's us here today in 2023. It's highly unlikely we're going to be alive in 2123. But we pray that what we do inspires the people that follow us to speak the way we speak, to encourage and offer hope to all listeners.
Yeah.
True.
Sluggy, I love what Ronnie said. He said so much, but I'll tell you what I pulled out because
I know
it's my life.
Yes.
You see, counseling in Barbados, too taboo. So for anyone to say that they need help, Ronnie and Sluggy, for persons to admit, it's like, who do you say it to? So Ronnie, I'm glad that you made the call. You opened up the way that persons can feel comfortable enough to pick the phone up and say, okay, well, I'll call the radio station and let me see who they can help me, you know, get in contact with, because it's still too taboo. And without counseling, without the necessary intervention, I would not be here. I would not be here. But through my church family, through the counseling services that I would have received and so on, you know, you're able to recognize that you are valuable and your life has value. And while you may not be where you want to be as yet, as Ronnie said, there's more. And I know my pastor would always say that to me. There's more. There's more for you to do. But there's so many people who can't see the more. They don't have a person who's going to engage them in a conversation for them to recognize that there's something that they can do that no one else in this world can do like them. And that they're needed to do that one thing. It may even be more than one thing. Ronnie, your ability to sing, your ability to play with words, because I am a social commentary lover.
Mm-hmm.
I can just sit and listen. Sometimes I go and I pull up old calypsos and stuff and I listen, but that's a way to communicate with people. Yeah, so that's another medium to effectively communicate. And I think as a society, we've lost our ability to effectively communicate. The new term emotional intelligence, because we don't have that.
Yeah. It's so true here. And anyone they're listening, 434-1790, 434-1790, 434-1790. Listening to you speak, if anyone they're listening,
we have a call.
Sluggy. Oh gosh, we can't get to. Yes, please. Good evening. Welcome to Beatrice Rhythm and Rhyme. You have Uncle Ronnie and Sluggy, and we have Auntie Keisha here. Go ahead.
I was trying to call for you for quite a while, and I did not get to it. Only now after Ronnie spoke, and they asked to call.
They get through. Well, I'm glad to get through now. Thanks for calling.
My dear Mrs. Sluggy, this is your old friend.
Yes, please.
Anyhow, I wanted to let you all know that I am the greatest teacher that there is in Barbados.
I love it.
Not because I had all my students pass, but believe me, a few years ago, I was in town, and I got a big hug. And when I turned and looked, this young gentleman said to me, "You know, I have to thank you. I am going to give a eulogy this afternoon for a cousin of mine who was found hanging in a house." He said, "If I did not meet you, if you did not catch up with me at college and pull me back, I would perhaps be in the same position." He said,
"Oh gosh."
He said, "You know, because when I was teaching, I'm not interested if you really get 100% in French or not. You know, I teach people first." And I knew from the way he looked that he was dabbling with things. You know, you are taught that when you're doing a diploma in education and so on. And I knew. And I put him aside, got it not well. One of the wealthy ones that come in the car and walk out at the back of the college. He was the normal ones on the little bicycle and, you know, playing big man. And I called him and I spoke to him and I told him, "You cannot fool me. I can see that you are being involved in this sort of thing and you should watch yourself because it could not end well for you." And, you know, I spoke to him, but I never tried to make him ashamed or cause any big problem.
Anything. Well, you never make him ashamed in front of your friends or the school or
nothing.
In class, lock up in jail, nothing. So
in class is not that's not for me in class. And
nice.
You know that I spoke to him and I told him, "This road is not going to lead you where you think you would go."
Uh-huh.
And he did my call. And then that afternoon in town, when he hugged me and things, I didn't care how much the principal and all the others used to tell the students that I am this and that and the other and they didn't like me. And I don't like she. They come in with the thing that I am this great big gorilla fund and so on. And they're ready for me. And she don't get this passes. I said, "I got one pass and that was on the exam that I sat." I don't get passes. I pass the exam that I sit. If you are supposed to be sitting the exam, is you supposed to be getting passes here?
Not you, it's true.
Right, you know. But the thing is, you try to sing them down, but you find that it is very disheartening to think that other teachers like yourself will set up students against you so that you will look like a big bad wolf. And then the students do not pass the exam. But the whole point about it is you that person walking about there with a piece of paper that means nothing or without the paper. The only paper you got is toilet paper if you can afford to buy it. And that sort of thing. So you have to know, and I can tell you something. If I had to make a will and I had to leave them, I would to leave something for that boy, because that is a precious thing to me. I saved one life, if none other. And that is the kind of thing that you have to be conscious of. My conscience is clear. He did not follow suit and go and have to get hung in any old thing or the other. He was alive and well. And that is what people don't always realize. You don't need to be a chum with the thing and people, teachers and so on, do a lot of damage by setting up students against other teachers because they're kind of jealous and if you get a promotion or whatever. And set up students against people who can only help them. There was a girl who was from, well, not a big company, but she had a boyfriend who had connections, who had access to the read and so on. And therefore, she had connections with the richer boys and things so that used to drive to school and stuff, used to get the things from her. And I called her and spoke to her. I told her, let me tell you something. When so-and-so's father, who is an attorney, and so-and-so's father, who is an accountant, and so-and-so's father, who is a doctor, get news about the child, they can go and speak to somebody, and the next thing you will be the one that will be set up there, that you, the little girl from down in St. Andrew, that got connections with the fella that got the weed out in the back.
Okay.
Be sure to keep your course clear. Because yes, when they start to talk, Auntie so-and-so are going to appear for them. Uncle so-and-so uh-huh. is going to give things. I said, keep yourself clear.
Right. All right. Good. And Mom, where you calling from? Mommy, where you calling from? We have another caller. Where you calling from?
Hello?
Yes, we have another caller. Welcome. Welcome to Beijing Rhythm and Rhyme. Good evening.
Thank you. I'd like to speak to Mr. Ronnie Clark, please.
Yes, please. Ronnie Clark is here.
Off air.
Okay. Off the air. That will happen. Go ahead, Slug. You're going to wrap up.
Yes, please. Okay, Keisha. It was a wonderful evening. Such beautiful calls. If you want us to take away anything from Releasing the Past, your book, tell us what you want us to take away from the book and where can we get it. And I just want to tell you, it's been wonderful. We must do this again in the very, very near future.
Thanks, Sluggy, for the invitation first and foremost.
No problem.
Releasing the Past, what can I say about the book? There's always a better tomorrow.
Nice.
And that was the way I had to choose to look at things. There's always a better tomorrow. And as long as we have life, there is always the opportunity for improvement, whether it be self-improvement, professional development, growth. So that's my takeaway. And you can get the book on Amazon. It's available on Amazon. I don't have any currently on the island. I think I sold the last copy I had gave it away a couple of weeks ago. But nice. There are no copies currently on the island, but you can access it from Amazon. So it's available on Amazon, Releasing the Past, Building Beauty from Brokenness by Keisha Rock.
Nice. I love it. I absolutely love it. Keisha, we could do a part two, attack a deeper life at the book. You will let me know.
Keisha's on long leave. I have some time on my hands. So let's set a time.
you put long leave?
Yes, I said I'm on long leave. I'm going back in April, so just ahead of time.
No problem. No. We will not put a big pause in between. We will do a part two. People, you can listen out. Keisha's an educator. She's also an author. She's also a woman of God. So we will have Keisha back for part two. We can ask about her personal journey with God, how her personal journey with God have helped her in her educational sector, and how all that helped her as an author, and what does she have to offer Barbados that can really help us. All of that we will look at next week for part two. She's on lonely, so we'll kidnap her again. Keisha, once again, thank you very much, Mr. Clark. Thank you for the extra time.
Thank you, Ronnie.
Thank you for the extra time, Ronnie. I love you, my brother. I love you, Barbados. I'm gone.
Thank you, Sluggy. Thank you, Keisha. Have a fantastic evening.